Welcome back. It Starts With You podcast with me, Mark Hopkins. And in this episode, the awesome, the amazing, the absolute lovely as well, Adam Nichols from Roslyn David, the marketing recruiter extraordinaire, as I like to call him. Lovely guy, super guy, known him for ages. I call him a really good friend. And we've known each other now. God, so we did a podcast 4 years ago, this exact podcast 4 years ago. And I must have known it now for 5 years. It's amazing how LinkedIn, you get to know people and become friends on LinkedIn, and you see them every day posting, you still think you know them. And you do. And when you have, like I'm having a conversation with Adam here, you kind of realize, oh my God, we are really similar people. We really got the same views and same kind of ethics. This is really cool. I don't know why. I think it's fascinating how the psychology happens. Anyway, here's the podcast with myself and Adam. I hope you enjoy.
Yeah, since you've been doing a few and listened to a couple of them.
Oh, good. Oh, thank you.
Yeah. So I just thought we did one about 4 years ago that I was the podcast conversation I ever did.
Yes. Was it really? Have you done a few since? Yeah.
Oh yeah, I've done loads, but yeah, I just always remember your one and enjoyed it, and I think we've got very, very similar views on lots of things, mate. So I thought I'll just say, yeah, well, we could jump on and do another one if you want. Here we are.
Yeah, this is great, because I did target myself a podcast this month, and I couldn't think of anyone to kind of speak to that I really wanted to speak to. Then you came along and was like, fuck yeah, let's
speak to Happy it. Days. Good. So how are you, mate? Are you well?
I'm good. I'm busy, and I mean like... really busy. This seems to be, I don't know if it's like this in your sector, but there seems to be this, there's loads of jobs, and now all of a sudden the candidates have started coming about, and then they've dropped off again, and that's just the summer drop off. And I'm feeling the market, it's changing again, there's something happening, but I don't know if it's, we're coming back to some sort of norm. We've not been normal since COVID in my sector, but clients are screaming out for people. So it's not about matching CVs as much as it used to be. It's about now matching abilities and skills that they may have done in the past. So you're looking at CVs and going, well, he's done a little bit here and a little bit there and a little bit there. So if I bring them all together, then it equals this job, which kind of what you should have been doing in the past. But it was just so much easier to find the right people rather than finding people you're going to negotiate into a role, if that makes sense. So that's why it's been making it busy. So interviews are longer with candidates. Your search is different now than it's ever been, and the light's going to Google run out. it's changed so much, mate. It really has in the last couple of years.
I'm going to check. Yeah, no, I think you're right. It's definitely not been normal since COVID. Like, what is normal for what we do anyway? But I saw something that the wonderful Josh Harrison commented on a post the other day.
Yeah.
And he said something that was absolutely spot on. He said that now we're returning back to normal. A lot of recruiters who haven't needed to do any BD for the last 18 months are now going, oh shit, the pipeline's slightly drier than it was. And yeah, I mean, we're fortunate enough that we're in a market that is always really closely aligned to sort of bottom line revenue, because marketing is obviously really close to sales and that kind of stuff. So touch wood, we're always going to be busy. But yeah, it has been a strange sort of 6 months.
What's kind of starting to become more kind of predominant now is the conversation of working from home and working from the office seems to have.
Yeah,
I thought it turned a corner last year and everyone's coming back to the office and things are coming back to normal. Now it seems to be a predominant conversation again this year, where I'm not hearing so much in the manufacturing world, but in the recruitment world, it seems to be like the front and foremost. Is that what you're experiencing with your kind of business and hiring? And
yeah, are you talking about hiring internally at Roslyn David?
Yeah, as well as.
Yeah, so when we started the business.
Yeah.
Yeah, when we started the business yonks ago, it was just sort of two of us, myself and Bobby, who I bought out at the beginning of the pandemic. And we always wanted to be able to remote log in from anywhere and have flexible working in play from the beginning, because for all we knew, it was just going to be us two for the indefinite future. And if we went on holiday, we wanted to be able to log in and crack on. So we've had flexibility in the sense of work from home, do what you like within reason from the get-go. So we haven't struggled with regards to talking about flexible working with people that we're hiring. But what I have noticed is, for example, Harry, who we've hired, he's been here a year and a bit, going great guns, really, really big asset to the business. One of the pulls for him was the flexibility, because where he was at previously, it was you can't work from home.
Full stop. Really. Doesn't make sense. It's proven, isn't it, now in the last couple of years that you can run a business from home. Well, I say can run a business, you can run a desk from home. Running a business from home, you and I both know it's a different story. You can run a desk from home as long as you've got all the right tools, which most companies have. But then the methodology of management has to change, and how you got to let go of shit, basically, haven't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you know, everyone's in on a Monday, and that's not because I say everyone has to be in on a Monday. It's just the way that it's fallen over the last couple of years. And that's great, because we all get together in the morning for an hour and talk about last week, talk about this week, talk about the pipeline, talk about roles and all this, that and the other. And then, you know, the rest of the week, it's kind of come and go as you please, really, which works really well for us. And I've always been a believer in, as long as you're happy, first and foremost, and you are doing your job properly, I don't care where you work. Like, one of the guys, James, in the office has got a camper van that's all decked out with a bed and all that sort of stuff. And if he said to me, I want to bugger off to France for 3 months and I'll still work, but I'll be driving around different weekends. Yeah, cool. No problem.
It's fine. That's cool. That'd be awesome, wouldn't it? Driving around Europe and still doing your job. I think that's a possibility, isn't it? So you'd go about 4 or 5 hours a day to one side. Yeah. So, it's not too bad.
Possible. I mean, he can probably hear me somewhere in the building, so I'm hoping he's not going to then come to me in about an hour's time and go,
I'm going to be traveling Europe.
I'm buggering off. Yeah.
But this is why I mentioned it. I'm seeing it a lot more now talked about on LinkedIn within the recruitment sector. And then when you look outside the recruitment sector, there seems to be this accepting now where, yes, you can, or no, you can't work. So it's kind of every job I get, I'll ask, can they work from home? No, straight from the office. It's like, okay. But then when you go for a visit to the client, the building's full of people. Whereas if you go to a recruitment company now, it's one or two people there, and normally it's 10 or 15 people in there. So we've seemed to have modernized or changed or something. It's good. I like the evolution, but there's still a hard core, I think about 40-50% that are still against working from home, which I find is strange. Yeah,
I think our ratio is probably a little bit lower than that. I would say 90% of our clients, maybe even slightly more, operate some sort of hybrid model. It might be come in the office one day a week, come in the office 3 days a week, everyone works from home on a Wednesday, or you have to be in on a Tuesday or whatever. But most of the clients we work with, obviously, because we're only filling marketing roles, right? They have some degree of flexibility. And shock horror, the ones that don't are the ones who struggle to hire. You think that there's maybe a bit of a pattern?
Maybe a little tiny pattern. Tiny pattern.
Yeah, but some people don't. There's some companies I get, like I've recruited for a real estate company in London, and they're kind of like, you can work from home if you want, but we want everyone in the office all the time because they're selling office space. That's what they do.
Yeah,
so I kind of get that, but then
I was gonna say, I got a very similar kind of situation with engineering where they're selling the product or they're selling a capacity of the manufacturing, so they don't really need to be in the office, so they can go, they all have to be on the road all the time, on meeting clients and stuff, so they don't really need to be in the office all the time, so they can work from home, or it's probably easier to work from home because you get up in the morning quickly on the laptop, right, jump in the car, off to the meetings and come back. Whereas some companies I have come across where you've got to go to the office, pick up the company car from the office, like literally clock in the office, and then get the company car, drive to the meeting, come back, drop off the car, clock back in, be there until 5 o'clock, and then go home. And that pisses a lot of people off. That
does. Adult flexibility, isn't it? I think that's what people just want to be. People want to be trusted and people want to be respected. And that old adage, trust has to be earned. It's like, well, come on. If you're hiring the right people and your interview process is right, then just give them a degree of flexibility. If they mess it up, they mess it up. Yeah. If they take the piss, they take the piss. But you've got to get the right people in. You have to demonstrate to the outside world that you treat people like grown-ups, I think.
I think so. Are you finding the way your staff works from home is different to the way they work in the office? Or do you think they work a little bit more intensely because they're not being watched? So do you see what I'm wondering? It's like an opposite effect.
Yeah, I mean, if someone came into our office and didn't know any of us, you wouldn't be able to tell who's in charge, because I'm not the type of director that goes and stands over people's shoulders with my arms behind my back and asks what they're up to. So you wouldn't really be able to tell. And truth be told, I'm the biggest distraction in the office because
I can imagine.
Yeah, thanks, mate. I'm the noisy one who sings songs and makes jokes and takes the piss out of people, and people take the piss out of me. So I think if you ask my team, they probably are most efficient when I'm not around, to be completely honest. So whether they're in the office and I'm working from home, or they're in their own office at home. So yeah, I think people probably get more shit done when I'm not around. So whichever way that's balanced.
When you going on holiday next? Oh man. No, I started asking about that to get your thoughts on that one. It's like it's rearing its ugly head again. And also what's rearing its head, I've noticed as well on LinkedIn, is a lot of redundancies in the recruitment world, which is a very strange scenario considering the amount of work that's around at the moment.
Yeah. I think there's a shed load of work, but the work is harder to get. And when the work is harder to get, your internal talent teams or your hiring managers or your MDs or your CEOs, they're peppered with recruiters going, can I have a look at that? I can help you.
Yeah.
And it's only the ones who are good at the BD that can differentiate themselves from other recruiters who know how to pitch, who know how to turn someone's head with an in-mail rather than just a, hi, we're Roslyn David and we do this. The ones who are good at it are going to be okay. Yeah. I think the ones who aren't, if that's right. Well, the right way to put it.
I see what you mean. That comes down to, though, and you see it in a lot of companies, and I'm sure you've worked for some companies like this, where BD isn't really trained that well, or just any form of sales isn't trained that well. Sometimes you get the trainer come down, or sometimes they give you the DVDs. I don't know if you've ever worked for companies done that before. It's always the same shit as well. Yeah. But I always find that business development, especially today, is more nuanced than it's ever been. And you can't just go, especially with social media now attached to the whole marketing thing. And us as recruiters now, we're not just salespeople, we're marketers as well. You know, slightly psychologists as well. You know, we're trying to help people, trying to work shit out. But it's this kind of weird amalgamation. I see it with you, with what you do with Roslyn David. It's videos. It's talking to people, listening to people, giving advice. And that draws people in. And it's, you know, if you look at the good old fashioned sales funnel, I think that now takes over a good 50% of the sales funnel. The last few bits is that communication one to one with people, discovering where the leads are at and going down that route. And that's what I've discovered, especially since starting this business 8 years ago. It's
8 years. God, that's gone quick, isn't it?
Oh, can ask me. It really has. I was chatting to my accountant the other day about it, and he goes, so what are you going to do for your 10th? You're going to, because I've had a child since, and you're going to change the name of the business, or you're going to do this? And it's like, that's only 2 years away. I can't think that soon. my 10th anniversary is actually, I'm going to tell you now, this is a secret, so don't tell anyone.
It's not that it's on a podcast that everyone can
hear. It's on a podcast. I'm actually going to look at expanding the business by my 10th. So I'm going to look at a couple of business models I've got some ideas with and start bringing in people in that sense. So that's where I've enjoyed it on my own for so long, because all I've done is manage people and manage teams and develop for other people. And the flexibility of being on my own has been brilliant. And keeping the money to myself has been brilliant as well. But I'm thinking, right, I'm 44 this year, on Monday, actually. And I'm thinking, what do I want? What do I want the business, the future of the business? And it's time now to start making it become something a little bit different and something a bit bigger. And I think that's when you kind of went in that direction sooner than me, a lot sooner than me.
Yeah, I mean, I had the advantage of starting with someone else. Obviously, when we started the business, I started the business with someone who'd never done any recruitment before, but had heard me bang on about it a lot.
Interesting.
We were very close.
Yeah.
And at the time, he was kind of doing quite a senior operations level role in his dad's business. And I was obviously headhunting and placing marketing people. So the logic was, we'll start Roslyn David. I'll teach you all I know and all I don't know, in theory, about marketing, recruitment and headhunting and that sort of stuff. And he can teach me to run a business and show me how balance sheets work and what a corp tax return is and all this, that and the other, and how dividends work. And then, you know, unfortunately, it got to a point where it wasn't for him. You know, and it wasn't the right opportunity for him. And he's gone in a completely different direction. He's studied some really interesting stuff, and is kind of going through a master's as well. So he's gone in a completely different direction. But, you know, I did find myself in April at the beginning of the pandemic going, shit, I'm now 100% shareholder of a business with employees. And I remember that first phone call to my accountant. I phoned him and I was like, hi, mate. I know we don't talk that much because Bobby's been doing all of it, but I think we need to get to know each other a little bit now.
Yeah. Yeah. What's a dividend?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Can I pay myself? Is that okay? How do I do that? So, yeah, it was a very, yeah, exactly. It was a very, very steep learning curve, but
it is. Yeah. And at the beginning, or even starting the business, and when I look back at the beginning, I had some money in the business that I used a company called SSG, and they gave me some money at the beginning to help me out. It wasn't massive amounts of money, and I took it all because I needed to pay bills and everything. And then I got this massive tax bill at the end of the year, and I was going, why have I got a tax bill? I've never made any money. Just because you took money. That's why.
Yeah.
I was like, shit. Yeah. And then you have to work it all out then after that. But luckily, you know, things work itself out, and it's not complicated. If the simplicity of it, but it's really complicated working out how to do corporate tax, VAT. If you let the experts deal with that, but have an understanding, I think that's all you really need. Is
how I've got probably it's like a therapy session this month.
This is it.
I reckon I've got a slightly looser understanding than I should have, but all I make sure is it's easier in our business because we don't have a huge amount of working capital needed because we haven't got stock control to worry about and products to buy and manufacturing and this, that, and the other. So I just make sure that every invoice that we get paid, I put at least 30 or 40% of it in a separate account and just leave it over there.
That's exactly what I do. Well, I have separate accounts to envision, you know, VAT, corp tax, blah, 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 paying the accountant, pay me.
Yeah.
I break it all down as soon as an invoice comes, but it makes it so much easier when you've done that. And it's just, who was I chatting to the other day? I won't mention his name. He hasn't paid his corp tax in 2 years. And I'm like, why?
And he's still trading.
And he's still trading, yeah. Because of HMRC and all the problems they've been having in the last couple of years, and they're still chasing people, and they're so far behind with their book. I don't know if they caught up with him. This was before Christmas, though, when he told me this. So whether they've caught up with him or not by now. But when you kind of look at it and you see like people have not paid their VAT, and then you kind of dig deep down why and what's going on. It's because they just have a lack of knowledge and understanding. That's what's going on. My light's going to disappear again. We've got to stay there. What's happening? I've lost my trail of thread now. But yeah, so he hasn't paid his corp tax in 2 years and no one's caught up with him about it. But what happens? They'll give you a bill and charges, and then you either pay it or don't, and you end up in court.
Yeah.
And that's it, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, touch wood, I've never even had an overdraft on any of our business accounts or a credit card, no loans, no nothing, paid all the tax on time, touch wood again, everything's been tickety-boo. Yeah. So, and I think to go back to your original point about us growing, we are eight people on Monday because we've got a new staff.
Oh, good. So, yeah. Is that the most you've been? You haven't contracted it's the most you've been,
No, we lost one person who was in like a sort of client development position at a more junior level, and she went over to London to do some various internal bits. Loved her, she was great, would have her back in a heartbeat, but she's doing the London thing and loving life. So we went backwards by one headcount then, but then we've since replaced that person, and now I've got another person coming
back. So. Gross. What's the I obviously it's an early question, 34 minutes into a podcast, but what's the future then? Are you going to keep growing, or do you think this is about where you need to be at the moment? Or
so if you'd asked me that question when we first started, I had the intention of just having Ross and David, the marketing headhunters, didn't want it to be more than about 20 people, because the thing that makes us so successful, I don't mean that in an arrogant way, but the thing that makes us so consistent with everything in the business is the fact that all of our messaging is consistent. So if I pitch to you and you were a client, or if David did it, or Woody or James or Harry, they're all thereabouts, they're all going to be giving the same message to a client. And I think once you get a business that is across two different sites, or you've got a couple of different teams that are managed by different people, you then can get inconsistencies in service proposition and sales and service overall.
So you're just opening up these little areas and pockets of areas and
yeah. And so that was kind of my thoughts originally. Fast forward to 5 years to now, we've got plans to do a few different things, which I can't tell you right now. I would happily tell you offline, but yeah, we've got a few different ideas that we're going to try and apply our methodology to a few different things.
Because
we've got it absolutely nailed now. I'm really proud of it. You know, the way that we operate, you know, a lot of people sort of say, oh, you run a recruitment firm, you don't post any job adverts, and you don't have a candidate CRM. How'd you do it? And I'm like, well, there you go. How do we do it? That's the beauty of it.
But that's the sweet spot, isn't it? By being a recruitment agency that doesn't act and work like a recruitment agency. That's to me, that is the Rubicon of recruitment agencies, where everyone else is like trudging through with CRMs and cold calling and everything. Whereas a business like yourself are going, right, this is what we do. And suddenly it's like a magnet. People come to you and start listening to you doing what you say. Is that the right word to kind of put it? Doing what you say in that sense, and they go, oh yeah, this is really easy, or working with you is really easy. And
well, but yeah, it's interesting to say it. The way I describe it is that when I've worked in recruitment agencies previously, it's kind of been a little bit like this. So the client is here, the hiring company is here, and we're here, and we just take the orders from above. Oh, you need me to go and find you an events manager up to 40k with software experience in Letchworth. Okay, cool. Or you need me to go and find this. But here, we're very much like that. So it is a consultative relationship where our best clients loosely tell us what they think they need and then ask us if we think that's right. They ask us if that person exists. They ask us if the salary's right. You know, the amount of times we've taken an initial brief on a role that is a particular role paying a particular salary. And when we get under the hood of what they're trying to achieve, it changes completely. And it's that consultative nature. So you're right in what you're saying, 100%.
Yeah, I realized this about 2 years into the business, and I changed quite a lot of things because I was just taking on anything. When you start a business, you take on everything, and then you make all those mistakes, and you're working with the wrong people, you've got the wrong type of jobs, you're charging the wrong amount as well, which I couldn't believe. But before that, I started this business, 10 years in recruitment, working with Reed and Modis and running teams and stuff, and I thought, when I start my own business, I won't make those mistakes that my team used to make. But you do. The motion is there. And then 2 years in, and that's where it switched for me, was they're telling me what they want. And I'm going, but you can't have that. But this is what it looks like in the marketplace and what your competitors are doing. And the conversation then went from that master-slave kind of conversation to equals in a meeting room. And they're listening to you. And that is extraordinary. And you've got to control yourself a little bit, because you do get a bit of a power rush when people are listening to you in their own, you know, they're running a million-pound manufacturing business. You kind of go, oh, you're listening to me. Who am I? And then you get that whole...
Imposter syndrome kicks in.
It's been extraordinary. And then lately, in the last kind of 12 months, I've been doing it a lot more. It used to be like 20-30% of companies I was working with. Now it's nearly 100%. Where I'm going, you need to see this guy. He's brilliant. He does this, this, and this. He can train for this, or you can train him for that. And they, oh, okay. And they take him on, and they're brilliant. Mm. And it's either you're getting good at what you're doing when you do that, and I'm trying to sound arrogant when I say that, or because you've been in the game for so long, you now stand to decipher what looks good, what doesn't look good, and you're able to kind of communicate the differences between these types of people. Without trying to sound arrogant, I'm good at my job. No.
Yeah, no, good. You are, mate. Yeah, absolutely. No, fair play. I completely agree. It's
still tough, though. I don't know if anyone else listening to this is finding it still tough, but it is. There's still the arseholes out there, the dropouts and the you know, the knife fight of recruitment is still happening.
I think the bit that I always find I struggle with is when a client that we haven't worked with gets in contact and goes, can you help us with this? Oh yeah, cool, cracking, when can we jump on a call? And they say, well, I've sent you the job spec, can you just find me some people?
You and I have got shared experience, haven't we? We had a client that came to me, and I must have spent about 6 hours Teams calls dealing with the engineering, European company as well, which had a business here in the UK. And they said to me, do you know any good marketing recruiters? And I was like, fucking hell, yeah, I know one straight away. And that's why I came to you.
He was busy, so you phoned me up.
I was about fourth, I think it was.
Yeah, cheers, mate.
That's all right. They were all busy. No, but we had a shared experience at the same time when you were having your problems with the same client. I was having new problems
with the same client. Yes, of course.
It went from this lovely relationship where she was listening and she was doing the job. She was new into the job as well as HR. Internal recruiter, wasn't she? And it was brilliant. We moved forward with a couple of vacancies and we had some candidates, had some interviews. It wasn't perfect because it was just a difficult role. And then she said, do you know anyone that does marketing? And I came to you and you said, I'll have a chat with them. And you had this brilliant conversation at the beginning, didn't you? And then all of a sudden, you and I both went, what the is going on here? They just stopped communicating overnight.
Yeah, it's bizarre. It's bizarre. Yeah. Do you know the experience I had, just to talk about a good experience? I got contacted by a recruitment company, recruitment agency, sort of headhunt. A recruitment agency / headhunt firm in London who needed to find their own head of marketing. And I'd never recruited for a recruitment company before. So I thought, this is going to go one of two ways. They're either going to be an absolutely colossal pain in the ass, or if we're aligned in our way of thinking, it's going to be one of the best client experiences I've had. Unfortunately, it was the latter. It was incredible because they just got it.
Yeah.
Interview feedback immediately, interviewed the people that I told them to interview, handled the process how I suggested they handled it, tweaked the role, tweaked the salary how I suggested, and they've got an absolutely blinding head of marketing in there. And it was just the smoothest, most perfect, communicating on WhatsApp, everything's instant. It was beautiful. If I could replicate that in all of my other clients, then life would be fantastic.
You should write a case study on that one and get the client in and ask them why. Yeah. In a video series. I've always wanted to do that. I wanted to turn this podcast into speaking to clients as well, getting them on the podcast. I've asked, and not many of them want to get their face on the screen and talk to a recruiter about recruitment that we've just done. But I'm working on it. There's a couple now I think I've got a bit closer with that may do it in the near future. But it's so difficult.
It's a really good idea, though.
Yeah, I think it is. And I think it gives people some kind of, especially people which are coming new into recruitment, kind of understanding, that's what good looks like. Because everyone's telling them, you got to be good and you got to do X, Y, and Z. But no one's actually physically shown them. It's like the boss that never picks up the phone to show the staff how to do a BD call. Because they never did it.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, do as I say, not as I do. There's a lot of that going around.
There's a lot of it, yeah. No, I found it fascinating that we experienced that at the same time, like with that one particular client.
You know, I'd forgotten about that until you mentioned it. I'm going to look back on that when we get off the phone.
Let me know what kind of, if anything, falls on. Because how it ended for me was, I think I submitted about 7 or 8 candidates and there was nothing for a week, and there was chasing and chasing and chasing, and then 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 6 weeks. And then I sent them an email, basically saying I'm not working on any of the vacancies that you've got. And I was very tempted to send them an invoice, but I was like, we're not retained. We're not, you know what I mean? That's the only issue with contingency. But I take a lot, especially if a big company like that comes to you with what they're, you know, a really known name in their marketplace, comes to you with vacancies, you think, this is good. This is going to be, they get it. They understand what recruitment is. They turn out to be the worst type of client sometimes.
Yeah, they can do. Yeah. I think it all comes down to the individual though for me, because I've had some clients that are like, I think the biggest company we work with is about $90 billion globally.
Yeah.
So they're colossal, colossal company. And I've recruited for different teams in that organization. And sometimes it is as smooth as butter, perfect transactions, perfect conversations, really easy recruitment processes. And then if I'm recruiting for a different hiring manager in the same company, it's an absolute ball ache. Because person A has a really good understanding of how to run a recruitment process and how to hire. Person B hasn't got a clue. So I think it all comes down to the individual. You know, the same. I've recruited for companies that are 2 or 3 people, and it's brilliant. And then other companies that are a similar size, and it's a shocking experience because they just don't know how to do it. And it sounds, the thing is, to someone who's never done it, it's simple. You want to hire someone, you interview a few people, you offer the person who's the best, you get them in, they start, everything's great. And it's like, yeah, but we don't live in like Willy Wonka land. That's not how the world works. Do you know what I mean? There's so many nuances and anomalies and changes and things that happen. And it's also about
Yeah, spot and it changes. And it changes throughout the year as well. And then where we are politically or where we are economically and need and stuff like that, you know, or where the candidate is. Are they being made redundant? Are they all right? Are they happy where they are? Are they being sacked? And it, there's so many levels of, like you say, nuances within it. You can't just match a person to a job any, well, ever could you do that. You've got to take in so many factors. And this is why I always say to HR managers about interview or hiring managers to interview, be a little bit flexible in the way your methodology interview. Don't be too rigid with it. Show them around the building or show them what their job looks like and then go and have an interview. It just changes the dynamics of interviews. Because I see a lot of companies, they'll do a phone call or they do a Teams and this candidate's still none the wiser what's going on, what's happening with the job. And then they go down and they're in the meeting room. They've not seen the facility or the office. There we go. My light's gone now.
Right. You still look wonderful, mate. Don't worry about it.
That's all right. That's all right. It's on soft focus, so it doesn't show everything. I just find it a very strange kind of world recruitment but a fascinating one at that. And every company I've worked with, it's never been the same kind of way you're doing things. It's always different. As much as you try to press upon them, try it this way, try it that way, it doesn't work for them doing it this way or that way. It works for the last company you worked with. So yeah, it's that's why I love it. I think that's why I'm still in it and not become a police officer or
Yeah, the people element is definitely kind of what I enjoy the most. As you said, everyone's different. Every project you work on is different. Every client is different. Every candidate conversation, every client meeting, everything is just different and different and different. And you learn from all of them. And sometimes you spot similarities which help you perform better in the next conversation you have that's similar. But yeah, the variation is definitely the bit that I like the most.
Yeah, I always learn. I try my best to learn everything from everyone. I'm from an engineering world and I don't know everything about engineering. But when I go to a place and I'm learning about it, the next client I have that's a similar client, I could press upon them, oh, I've got knowledge because I worked with your competitor. And they're like, oh, wow, well, here's the jobs and this is what we need.
It's funny, remembering stuff. I remember when I first started in recruitment, I reported into a guy who was brilliant and he just could remember the names of people he'd placed a couple of years ago and what companies they interviewed for. And I sat and I looked at him at the time, I was like, how are you doing this? If you fast forward now, I could walk you through a placement I made 7 years ago. I could tell you where they worked. I could tell you where they interviewed. I could tell you what salary they ended up getting.
It's so sad.
I could probably brief you on. It's pathetic, but your memory is phenomenal.
Here's a brilliant example.
Because you're doing this job.
Here's a brilliant example. I interviewed a guy in 2012, something like that, 2013. And a client came to me the other day and said, oh, we're looking for a service engineer that could do this. And I was like, I know a guy. I remember interviewing him in 2012. Yeah. What was his name? And it came to me straight away. His name wasn't Brian, but let's say it's Brian. I spoke to Brian. Yeah, he works at Joe Bloggs Industries. And let me see if I can find him. And then I went off on this kind of tangent of trying to find him. Found him on LinkedIn, poached him. So do you remember we had an interview? And he was so impressed. I remembered him. And then got him an interview. He didn't get the job, though. I'll give you the kind of that. But just having that sad moment of, I remember this guy, and it's not just one guy, it's hundreds of people that I've spoken to over the years that I'll remember nuance. Oh yeah, it's this guy that does flexibles, or this guy that does adhesives, and it's just these little things. It's so sad.
Yeah. No, it is sad, but it is useful. But I do genuinely remember looking at this guy, thinking, I don't know if I've got the memory for this. And then over time, your memory just becomes the backbone of what you do, really.
You forget everything else, though, like birthdays and anniversaries.
Oh, God, I got to the office this morning and thought, did I feed the dog? And I had to rack my brain to remember whether I got the dog bowl off the drying rack and fit. And I was like, oh, yeah, I did. But you asked for something work-related from 3 years ago.
Yeah. You're today's to-do list. I don't write a to-do list. I know exactly who I'm calling.
Exactly. Yeah.
You see, I know we put this meeting in our Teams. I knew it was happening at 11 o'clock and, I was prepared mentally already for these things. And it is that. I think it's This is the other thing about recruitment, and I keep saying this to people about it as well. It's not a work-life balance, it's a work-life integration. And even out of work, and especially when you run your own business, you know this. You know, someone emails you, you'll still 9 o'clock at night on the toilet email them back or something like that. You know what I mean? You just to keep conversations going. And I remember starting to do it when I was employed by someone, and I was doing it then, and I caught myself doing it, going, oh, why am I, what the hell? When did this start happening? When did I start caring like this? It was just a weird thing. But it just seeps into your pores and you become this person that just starts enjoying this sicko frantic world that
I think my one bit of advice though for people who get in that state, when whether you work for someone else or you run your own firm, is that you have to manage your holiday properly and actually book time out. Like for me, what I count as time off is when I put an out of office on, I hand stuff over to one of my colleagues, I delete my work emails and LinkedIn from my phone, and I have a long weekend, or I have a week off, or I go on holiday or something like that. And it only happens like probably twice a year, but that's my actual break. Like I'm due. I was meant to have one a couple of weeks ago, but I didn't manage it properly. So it got to the Monday and I had a shitload of stuff to do. So I just worked. So I've now booked a week out in July, hopefully. So that should be okay.
I've had to learn to let go. I stopped bringing my laptop on holiday. I used to be like sitting in the tent in Cornwall doing like sending CVs to people. Honestly, and it's in the last 2, 3 years I've stopped doing it. I've still got stuff on my phone, but I now do this process with clients and with candidates that I for 2, 3 weeks up to when I go on holiday, I tell them I'm going on holiday this week. I'm going on holiday this week. Limited connection, so blah blah blah. And I keep telling them. Then the last few days, then I send big emails saying, right, not here next week. So if this needs doing, let's do it now. If not, I'll be back on the XY date. And it's working so far. People are going, all right, have a great time. And then as soon as you come back, the phone's ringing on the day you're coming back. And the people have kind of kept the distance from you. So yeah, you've got to prepare. That's the thing, isn't it?
It's harder when you're kind of working for yourself without any colleagues to kind of lean on. I think when you do grow and you've got that colleague where you can go, do you know what? I am going to have a long weekend off and just look at my emails for me. The relief that you'll get. Don't get me wrong, the first time you do it, you'll shit yourself and you will still want to look at everything. But you'll love it. It'll be great.
I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to actually letting people do something else with them. Can you do the Twitter for me this time? Not touching
Exactly.
the LinkedIn though. Talk about LinkedIn. So your videos, how awesome are these videos that suddenly
Thank you.
appeared?
Good.
That's
Excellent.
Did you plan these, or did someone approach you and say, do you want to do these, or how did they all go?
No, we plan them. So we spoke to a guy that I know who's like a fractional CMO, and just sort of come in and have a chat with us. And he's been a client of mine. He's been a candidate. I've helped him build a couple of teams over the time that we've worked together. And he pointed out an individual on LinkedIn who just does podcasts, clips them up, and is just known as being a particular expert in a particular part of marketing.
That's credence.
And to take it a sort of a step back, like I've built my LinkedIn over the last sort of 5 or 6 years. I've got 34,000 followers, which is pretty
It's a
good
certain,
number on LinkedIn. It's not,
yeah.
I think 34,000 on LinkedIn is probably the equivalent of like 500,000 on Instagram, isn't it? Because obviously LinkedIn numbers are not quite as strong.
I think so. I think so.
But
If equivalent to Facebook, it's a lot. It's a lot more than Facebook, 30,000. So I agree.
So but I've built that up just by being relatively noisy on LinkedIn, calling people out politely as I can when I disagree with them, posting a lot about bad recruitment practices and trying to get known as this really honest headhunter who understands the industry, understands the problems that candidates face, et cetera, et cetera. And I kind of feel like I've done that. So this kind of point two of the phase is the LinkedIn videos. So we work with Gary and his guys at Capital Content, who are great. We came in and we've recorded, I think there's about 50. So we just sort of talked over a long period.
Whoa, that's a lot of videos to record all at once. Did you do that one day, or was...
Did it in a day.
Hell, I struggled with one.
I think I had to do a retake on twice, I think. Yeah,
that's brilliant. Like,
God didn't bless me with much, but I can talk, and touch wood, relatively coherently.
But this leads on what we've been saying, isn't it? Is once you know your job and you know your role, it's already programmed in your head to talk about how to interview better, how to, you know, select candidates, whatever the scenario is in recruitment. You drop us into any conversation, and if that question comes up,
the logic of the videos was just to be known, or to become more known on LinkedIn for being that guy who does the videos about marketing, recruitment, marketing, headhunting, talking about interviews, talking about dropouts, talking about CVs and LinkedIn profiles, and just taking it from that written content that I've done over the last 5 years and just adding something new to it.
That's a very good point, actually. It's taking it to that next level and being more visual. I found being more visual on LinkedIn, conversations with everyone is different. They think, well, I say they use the word, they think they know you. They pretty much do know you now and kind of who you are. And they see the face, the trust is there a little bit. Some people do get a little bit starstruck. That's happened once or twice. Oh, you're the guy.
What do you mean?
Right, so I phoned this client.
Sorry. Oh, Mark, you're big time. I love it.
I phoned this client. I got another story, by the way. I got two stories on this one. So I phoned this client and I said, it's Mark from Thomas Lee Recruitment. And the phone went really quiet. And I thought, shit, have I just said something really bad? And she went, are you the guy off LinkedIn? And I was like, I'm on LinkedIn. What do you mean? it didn't sink in what she was on about at first. And I said, I'm on LinkedIn. Yeah, but you do loads of videos and podcasts and stuff, don't you? And I went, yeah, that's what I do. That's me. And she goes, oh, I can't believe you're on the phone. It's like,
oh my God, that is outrageous. I've never had that. That's quality.
I was watching you earlier on today. This is insane. It's like, I'm fucking hell. This is terrible. I was embarrassed. Honestly, I went red. Not for her, but just in general. Like, oh, fuck, is it working then? Is that what's going on? So another story, I was heading down to, do you remember a guy called Antonio who did Antonio Talks and you had that recruited thing? He did a podcast in London and I went down to London to a WeWork and I said to a couple of guys that I know recruiters to meet at this pub just down the road from this WeWork in London. I can't remember where we were, in like some old part of London actually. So I did the podcast. I was really early. I thought it was going to be later. I thought the podcast was going for hours, but I was really early. I thought, right, I'll pop in this pub and I'll have a drink. And it was dead, this pub. You know, there's really cool, trendy like pubs in the middle of London, which are just flat roof and just in the middle of the street. Yeah. And I walked in and I went to the bar. And as I was just going to the bar, someone said, oh, Mark, like that. And I went, who the fuck is that? Who's that? And I turned and I went, hi. And he goes, you're the guy that does the LinkedIn videos and stuff. And I went,
oh, mate.
Yeah.
We need to get you a blue tick, Mark. We need to get a blue tick for you on LinkedIn. That's phenomenal.
Oh, my God. His name's Kieran. He's a really nice guy. We've been friends since and we speak sometimes on LinkedIn. But he's a recruiter as well. So I think that's kind of how he saw me. And he happened to be working in that WeWork that I did the podcast. And then he joined us. He joined us and my mates that we were all having a few beers that day. It was a lovely hot summer's day, and I got absolutely wankered in London and sat on the train for 6 hours because it got delayed.
Oh, nice. That's a nice sleep you probably had on there, isn't it?
A very nice sleep, and I ran out of batteries and I didn't get home till 2 a.m.
Oh, blimey. Yeah, I went to the recruitment expo last year and bumped into a few people that I was connected to, and everyone kept saying is you're a lot taller than I thought you'd be. And you know when you're like, I've never looked at anybody on any social media platform, like for example you could be 5'4" or 6'4", but I've never thought, I wonder how tall Mark is. Do you know what I mean? I just used to get people going, you're a lot taller than I thought you'd be. And it kind of makes you feel a bit self-conscious because then you go, why have you been thinking about how tall I'd be? How bizarre. So, yeah, that was weird.
It is. Do you think it's almost become that kind of, obviously we're not celebrities. I'm not trying to claim that we're celebrities or like that.
No.
But do you think it's kind of, I don't know if you've ever met a celebrity in real life. I met a few the one that stands out in my head is James Masters. I thought he was tiny. He used to play Spike in Buffy. And when I was a student in Bristol, we went to see him play guitar in a beer keller, I think it was, in Bristol. And I didn't realise he's quite tall, actually. He's quite a normal-sized human. Yeah. And I looked at him and went, oh, I thought you were tiny compared to everyone else on set and everything.
Yeah.
And it was quite strange. And Anthony Stewart Head is actually really tall. He was there as well, the one that played Giles. Yeah.
I've met a few boxers that are slightly different sizes than you'd expect.
Weird, aren't they? Yeah, because they're really kind of some of them are really small and compact, and then some of them are like they sit in doorways, and you think,
yeah, wow. I went to the Matchroom fight camp in Eddie Hearn's back garden in Essex in COVID, and I met Joe Joyce. And bearing in mind, I'm for perspective, I'm 6'5" and about 19 and a half stone. So I'm a big, relatively big lump. And yeah, there's a photo of me and Joe Joyce, and I look like a small school child standing next to him. The bloke's an absolute mountain. It's ridiculous. Colossal. But going back to what you're saying about LinkedIn, it is funny because you do get known for certain things. Like my stepbrother sent me a screenshot of a girl that he went to uni with. Had screenshot one of my LinkedIn posts, put it on her Instagram story with like a clapping emoji.
Oh, wow.
And then my stepbrother responded to her story and was like, yeah, that's my brother. And the girl's like, no way. I've just seen that on someone else's Instagram and I've screenshot it from their Instagram. So for someone somewhere, screenshot my LinkedIn post, put it on Instagram. Someone else has taken it, posted it. And then my stepbrother's seen it. So that was weird.
Yeah,
it
is strange.
That was the strangest one I
had. Yeah. So, some of my videos are on some people's websites, and nicely, they've taken the YouTube and said it's me. So they haven't, I don't know, they haven't put like a moustache on me and pretended it's someone else or something like that. But it's nice to say, oh, Mark's got this right. And you don't find out, by the way. No one tells you you're on, you discover these things. And there'll be like a link on some social media site and you click on it and goes, that's fucking me. How the hell did I get there? Jesus.
Where's the, come on, pay me. You've got me.
I don't mind, because what I call it is the sphere of influence. And every time someone likes something, it just adds a little bit more of that kind of to the sphere of influence of what you're doing.
Yeah.
And as long as I come across what I think I should come across on social media, which is me right now, as you see, then I'm happy with that. But if it's used in a different way or used in a kind of seedy, kind of horrible way, then I'm not happy about it. But it's...
yeah, I think everyone can learn from the Andrew Tate situation, because, like, you know, I need to choose my words incredibly carefully here. A lot of what he says in the context of the long form content that it's discussed in is okay, because there might be like a satirical build up, or it might be a response to something that someone else in the room has said. But when parts of it have been clipped up and then put on TikTok and put on YouTube with no context, and the tonality changed with music being overlaid, someone can take what you've said, completely manipulate the context, and it gives the impression you've said it in a different way. Now, neither you or I are ever going to be as famous and influential and as watched as Mr. Tate, but it has always made me, even with the small following in comparison that I've got, made me very mindful that anything I say in an email, on the phone, it's always crystal clear what I'm saying and can't be misconstrued. I think that's really important when you're putting videos out.
It's especially when you put videos out, especially because I've done it with a couple of posts I've done. I remember saying, I'll die on this hill. What was the post? I'll die on this hill.
That was recently, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I basically said that if you work at KFC and you're applying for a engineering manager job worth 80 grand a year, and you want me to give you feedback, then you are gravely mistaken, because I won't give feedback. The only feedback you get is you're rejected, because... Mm. You know you shouldn't be applying for that role. So anyway, so I put that on, and I got hate, real hate. And it was quite horrible, actually, some of the messages I was getting from people. So I had to
switch messages.
I had to switch the comments off on that as well.
Wow.
I think, did I switch the comments off? No, I think I just did connections for comments. And they were loads of recruiters saying, no, I agree. And then these people started coming into it. And say, well, and they've missed, again, this is going down the route of they've not read the post.
Yeah.
To understand, I've simplified the post. It's a bit more complex to that. But they've not read the post, and they've then jumped to the conclusion of, I'm a recruiter that never gives feedback, which is totally inaccurate. I'm a recruiter that gives too much feedback to people at the same time. But when you start seeing applications coming in and they work at KFC, they work at Subway, they may have a degree, they may not have a degree, but they're applying for jobs which are way beyond their capability. And you got to give them a line of which, stop doing it, guys. It's just pointless. It's wasting your time. And that was the day I felt I need to say something about this. And that's how I kind of react sometimes to certain things.
I think you, what you said there is absolutely spot on. And I think, I mean, I know you relatively well from kind of a LinkedIn conversations and posts and stuff. And I know you will have covered your ass in that post. Without even reading it, I remember seeing it. And I meant to go back to it, but I didn't, unfortunately, but I shall now. But I would bet my mortgage on the fact that you've covered your ass in that and made it abundantly clear what you're trying to say. But there'll be some idiot who reads half of it or reads someone else's comment, makes an assumption on what the post is. Happens all the time. And my dad said to me when I was very young, you can't reason with stupid.
Oh, no, you can't. And you can't reason with people that don't get the joke as well. So if you put a post about something comical, and what was it once? There was a post I did, and it was a comedy post basically, and they misinterpreted it, and they just went, "Well, I don't do that, or it's not like that." You know what I mean? They got very angry in the whenever I see those, I don't like them. I like everyone's comments as a norm because I read all the comments, and I sometimes comment as everyone's comment as well. I do my best to. But when I see that post, when I see that person's commented that some negative, I just don't like it and I don't comment, and it stands out from everyone else's. And they hopefully just, it's like that moment in that movie where Invasion of the Body Snatchers, where they just point at.
What you mean?
Yeah.
I know what you mean. So yeah, LinkedIn's a fun place.
Yeah. Do you think it's going to continue being a fun place? As in, do you think the future of LinkedIn is what we see today, or do you think it's going to evolve to something completely different?
I think it, just like all other social media platforms, it has already crossed over into being a bit Facebooky and a bit Instagrammy. You and do you remember that girl who was stood on that rock and was about to jump into the sea in a bikini, and she was like, I've got to get your attention. I want to fill your sales roles. I'm just going to do something crazy. jumps in the sea and everyone goes, oh, fuck off.
Video to that, by the way.
If I was in slightly better shape, I was going to go and stand in my garden and jump in a paddling pool, but I can't get this body out on LinkedIn, mate. That's not happening. But no, to answer your question, I think that personal branding has made it that people put pictures of their weekend and their meals and their kids and stuff like that on LinkedIn, which is okay.
Yeah,
I think there is a space in the market for, never mind the pleasantries, this is a business platform. I think there's a space for it, like LinkedIn was when it started.
Yeah.
But it's all about monopolizing the market and how many people use it. So the fact that LinkedIn is where everyone is, we've just got to suck it up and deal with it.
I think the direction it's going in, I don't know if you've got a Facebook business account and a Facebook, you don't go that. So on my phone with Facebook now, my business account looks like a personal profile. So you can just click between them both. So I can talk like a person, but with a business title. And I think LinkedIn is going to head towards that with the business accounts. I think they're going to start becoming more and more like personal accounts. So then you can have two voices for you, one for yourself and one for your business.
Yeah.
Because also there's a few LinkedIn experts that come to me and try to sell their services. And they tell me this now, where be yourself on your LinkedIn profile. Don't post jobs. Don't do this, don't do that. But then on your business, post your jobs, post just the serious stuff, basically, and try to distance yourself from that. So it's in two different entities. Mm. I kind of get that. And I think it's personal branding is really important and everything. But I'm not a cultist into the personal branding world. I'm just me. I just understand what I want to do. Because I'll be honest with you, if you look at my TikTok, it's all over the freaking place. I don't know what I want to be on. But on LinkedIn, I know I'm just selling me, my business, what I've got going on.
Yeah.
And then my thoughts and my ideas and try to slightly entertain people, hence why I do podcasts and videos and a little bit of comedy.
Mine was all accidental, really. Like when I left a recruitment company and they made me remove all of my LinkedIn connections, I was down to about 250 connections.
And oh, then God.
I didn't even make a decision. It wasn't a conscious decision. I just started going like this and started putting posts out. And because I'm quite a sarky and satirical so-and-so anyway, that was just the tone of how I was writing. And then I got back up to 1,000 connections, and then I had 2,500 connections. Then I had 10. Then I started getting the, then it changed so you could follow me rather than connect with me. And then it's just gone like this and got bigger. And that is purely from being myself. And, you know, my, I think Dan, is it Dan Kelshaw? Dan Kelshaw, is that his name? He said something once on a podcast where he was like, if you put a post out and you lose connections or you lose followers, that's absolutely fine. Because if they don't like what you're saying and you are being authentically true to yourself, chances are you're not going to want to work with them anyway.
Yeah.
And that was an absolute light bulb moment for me. Like, I'm not an arsehole. Like, it wasn't going on and being offensive and being nasty, but I'll put a relatively hard-nosed opinion on LinkedIn about posting a job advert or about companies that don't give interview feedback or whatever. If you don't like it, it's fine.
And there will be people that don't like things, and you need to accept that. And the other thing you need to accept is what people say about you is none of your business as well. So it doesn't matter, unless they're being really horrible and rude. And
I got a screenshot once. I got a screen. Do you remember the Tutti Recruity thing that was kicking about?
Yeah.
I got, someone sent me a screenshot where they were all calling me all manner of names in this group chat and saying every time he posts, we need to go on there and shoot him down and tell him that he's wrong and all this. And I just went, game on.
Oh,
absolutely
wow.
No problem. Yeah. I got like screenshot, and I called people out. I sent the screenshot to the individuals that were in there. They did piss me off a little bit, but I sent it. I was like, look, don't say stuff behind people's back that you wouldn't say if you were standing in a room with me. And every single, I think there was four people that I saw, and every single one of them was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. That WhatsApp group was so toxic, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, that's cool, but just don't be a dick. You know,
we have a rule in the Recruiter's Arms, because I still run a little forum called the Recruiter's Arms, where we can talk about other people, but you need to be exactly what you said. If you're saying it in here, you've got to be saying it out there. And we've realized that we've stopped talking about people now. We talk about things in general rather than like our own problems and stuff like that. Because there was a moment where people would come in and start slagging people off on LinkedIn. I'm like, no, whoa.
It's not what we're trying to do.
Not what we're trying to achieve here. It's nice to take the problems off LinkedIn that recruiters talk about and bring them in here. Because I found when we first started it, there was too many people being angry on LinkedIn in the recruitment world, not realizing they're making it worse for themselves. So we brought it into the forum, and I did notice the LinkedIn posts dropping as in my circle. In other circles, it could be different. And we were talking more then. We were more discussing things, negotiating things, rather than being angry and backing people up all the time. We were disagreeing with each other at the same time.
Yeah.
We've dropped a little bit in the Recruiter's Arms, as in numbers and stuff like that. But the future, hopefully, we're going to start picking back up in this area. But it's a lot of work. And if you do another forum, it's a lot of work. But you kind of like you disagree with people, and that's great. But doing it in a private setting is better. Trust me on that one.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I went through a period where if I saw a post I disagreed with, I physically couldn't scroll past it without giving my 10 pence.
And that was me yesterday.
It led to some really good conversations. It led to some disagreements, and it led to all manner of weird conversations. But now, unless it's like, I have to feel really strongly about it, otherwise I'll just scroll past it.
Yeah. So again, another rule I've created for myself is now I need to scroll past things and not comment on things unless it's positive. So I comment on things. If I disagree with someone, there's normally recruitment trainers I disagree with quite a lot. I make it a positive thing rather than like, I'll question it. I'll say, well, why did you say that? Because this is my theory, my thoughts about it. And then it creates a debate, and I like that. That's how I like. But it was before in the past. I kind of still do it on Facebook if I'm just like, no, you dickhead.
Yeah, that's why I don't have Facebook, because I'm quite good at like playfully winding people up. And my missus says to me, like, if I had Facebook, I would just spend hours just poking people and winding them up. Like, we live in a village which is quite a nice village, and there's a lot of sort of families that have been there for generations and stuff, and there's like a Facebook page for the village, and
People
moan, oh, I can't believe that the village shop closed on Saturday. What's going on? Blah, 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 blah. And I'd be jumping on there and going, you're just going to have to go to the next village, Ruth, aren't you? You know, like, come on. Yeah, I just steer clear of it, mate. I've got too much to do.
We've got to, because I'm in a new build, we're all moved in at the same time, so we're all like buddies and everything. We all swap numbers, yeah. And we've got a WhatsApp group. And one of the guys I kind of like, friend, you know, you're good friends with, you swap kind of ideas about stuff, and he's got this BMW with a huge freaking exhaust that's really loud. So wow. Every time he drives up the road, I get called to the face at the WhatsApp and go, "Who's that guy with a big ball exhaust?" And like, why did? And then you get the comments, they go, "No, I had to book me up that day." And
yeah.
And he messages me back, and you bastard.
Yeah, that's funny. I like it.
I like tantalizing people over it. Oh man,
it's good fun.
I hope
this has been good. Though,
yeah, this has been great. This has been great. I hope. What was I going to say? I was going to say something about LinkedIn then. I hope it continues the way it's going now. I hope it doesn't become this effort and drain on our resources.
Yeah, no, LinkedIn's. It's never going to go anywhere, is it? I don't think. I think it's going to stay as it is for a while. The thing, I'm pleased that we've gone over the curve of all that virtue signaling bollocks. That seems to have disappeared. Not disappeared fully, but it's nowhere near as bad as it was a year or two ago. Like, oh, I've just bought a homeless person a sandwich and took a selfie with him. So, oh, fuck off.
And surveys. We got rid of surveys as well.
Oh, yeah, polls have gone. Yeah.
Yeah, fuck that. Anyway, this has been awesome, buddy. Thank you very much, mate. For your time.
Yeah, good to catch up with you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Is this
no
the
problem.
That's the easy part, doing this.
All good.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for listening to all that podcast and listening to me talk at the end here. This is rare, by the way. I don't know about you. I've got loads of podcasts I never finish. So I need to finish them so that somehow it like pays it back and everyone listens to the end of mine. I don't know. But hey, listen, if you have something you want to talk about on my podcast, this podcast is called It Starts With You. It's all about you, how you did something, how you achieved something in your life. It doesn't have to be extraordinary, by the way. You don't have to all climb Mount Everest, start a business, change something in your life. Anything. I really want to hear it. The more different, the better. But I just want to document extraordinary things that people do. And that's what this podcast is all about. And it starts with you. Thank you for listening. Take it easy. Goodbye. And look out for other episodes as well. Okay. Bye-bye.